Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. Before we start, let's have a listen to Mark Lockhart's track Morning Smiles from his new album Smiling. We do it.
Let's do it.
Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. It's the 7th birthday spectacular part 2 with Mr. Mark Lockhart and my guest co-host Olivia Cutill. Hello Olivia, how are you doing?
I'm really good, thank you. How are you?
Awesome. All is well since we last spoke, which wasn't very long ago. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm good, thank you, Rob. Nice to be here.
Excellent. Yeah, it's brilliant. Thank you both for agreeing to come back and do part 2 of the 7th. Now, Mark, I've got some stats for you, a couple of easy ones. You're actually a returning guest because we did an episode together in your lounge, if you remember, or in the kitchen with some coffee. Do you remember?
I do remember. Soon after I moved into this house. So it probably was 10 years ago or something.
It was 7 years ago.
Ah, okay.
It was May 26th, 2017. And you were episode 20 of the Jazz Podcast. And now this one will be episode 249 of the Jazz Podcast. So there's been a lot in the meantime. But the other thing that happened to me that day that was really significant is you birthed my album, Gods of Apollo, which you'd think I'd have an album. You know, there's always one to hand. And actually, there isn't. But after your show, I don't know if you have probably told you this 100 times, and I apologize, but we sat down afterwards and I was literally going like, Mark, this is a nightmare. And you were like, what? And I was like, you know, the sax, Giant Steps, Moment's Notice, Coltrane, Parker. I was like, I can't do anything. I can't play any of these tunes in all 12 keys. And that's all I ever seem to do. And you said to me, you were like, stop. And I was like, yes. And then you said, why don't you focus on like, what are the things that you can do? Just think. And I was like, that seemed really obvious, but I was like, yes, can do. And at that point I was probably, was this 2017? I would have been 29 years old. And that was then like 2 years later that my first album came out, when I started to be like, okay, I'm going to do so. But it really was one of those like funny moments in those, a real sliding doors in my life, where I left your house after that episode and I left with much lighter shoulders than I went in with, in terms of the weight of musical history crushing my attempts to do anything, you know.
that's a nice story. I mean, actually it is quite a good bit of advice, isn't it? And the more I think about it, you know, don't try and do everything, concentrate on the things that you do. And I mean, for me, I think there's some great examples of that, you know. I mean, Thelonious Monk is a great example of that. You know what I mean? There's loads of things he probably couldn't do as a pianist, you know, technically. But yeah, he focused on the concepts and the things he could do and came out with this amazing thing. Yeah. And I kind of think that, you know, Ornette Coleman was like that. And, you know, even, you know, and so many people are like that, really. Yeah. You know, and I think there is a massive amount of pressure with colleges and, you know, to get a skill set that is entirely encompasses everything, you know. And in a way, what's the point of that? You know what I mean? You can be a great player who can do loads of things, but artists aren't really like that. Artists concentrate on a couple of things and work that and come out with something that's really strong. So I'm pleased I said that to you, Rob.
Great piece of advice. It really did change my life. And the other thing you did whilst I'm on this love train you helped my compositional process massively when I was younger by being like, you know, you could compose by just improvising onto a voice note and then listen back and see which bits you like. But that's something I do to this day, relentlessly playing, recording or singing in. Even quite often, if I sing ideas, I don't get bogged down in like harmony and chords, which quite often ruins it for me before I've even like gotten pen on paper. So what I'm going to do now is flip the script and talk about your brand new album, Smiling. And you've got 13 musicians on this album. How do you write for 13?
I think I write for in the same way as I'd write for five people in a way. I mean, that might sound silly, but I make sure the top and the bottom as I want them. So the counterpoint is really important in any music for me, regardless of how many instruments you have. And I try and emphasize that with my students as well. When I teach, I do a composition class at the Guildhall, and it's kind of what you've just referred to, Rob. You know, often they bring in loads of complicated chords and it all gets kind of mushy. It all gets filled up. And so I try and get them to just write a really clear bass and treble, you know, counterpoint. And so even though I was writing for 13 instruments, that's always my thing. That's always my technique, if you like, to try and get the top and the bottom working. Of course, with 13 people, I've got a lot of colors, you know, I've got a lot of things that I can do. So that's was really exciting. But in a way, the challenge, and one of the challenges, was not to make it too busy harmonically and to keep the space. So that was the reason why I wanted guitar and not piano on this album, because I wanted the space of the guitar, and sometimes piano fills all the gaps up a bit, you know.
It feels like that, listening to it. It's got loads of space. It doesn't feel like 13 people trying to squash through the door at once, which I wouldn't expect that it does. But still, even when I listened to it, I didn't even realize it was 13 until you said so.
Mm. Yeah. And I also wanted it to be simple, this record, in terms of harmony. So, I mean, it's not always simple. There's quite a lot going on, but a lot of it's on one chord, as you can probably hear. And it's about the groove, and it's about telling this kind of story on the groove, you know, and seeing where I can take the music through textural things. So quite a lot of it, there's a tonal center, you know, like the first tracks, I think it's E minor, but then it goes to E major a bit, and it's just by changing the kind of textures, you know. So I wanted to keep it simple in terms of harmonic change with this record.
Was there anything that, because it sounded to me, and I'll edit this out if you disagree, because it was so really stupid. But when I listen to some of the really, really good Chris Potter albums are like that. They've got a lot of space. They got a lot of guitar and a lot of like very simple harmony that kind of leaves people the freedom to play over it. But the minute I pressed play on Morning Smiles, I was just like, yeah, this just feels really, really good. And like an evolution of a lot of the jazz that I've heard in the like early 2000s. Does that ring true in any way to you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's all, we hear so much music, don't we? And I think when you write music, I think a lot of it is, you know, making decisions about what you leave out, because you can stick everything in, you know, and you can, and it can become a bit confused. So I think for me, it was finding the kind of thread to it. And a lot of it is the guitar, the rhythmic thing of what John does with the bass and the drums, you know, the kind of groove, the propulsion of that. And then almost thinking of it modally, really, the instruments around it modally, and bringing in little melodies and events. And I've always liked that. What's always excited me about writing is the surprises. So hopefully, you know, when people listen to it, they hear a little figure that, oh, where did that come from? Or how did that, where did, you know, well, where did it come from? How did it appear, you know? And I like that in music. I don't like it when it's really predictable. But if that makes sense, I mean, you know, I mean, sometimes predictable music's nice, but it bores me a little bit as well, you know. Well, when I came to your gig, there was that element of unpredictability about it, because I hadn't heard the album, you know, your new album, until I came to the gig. I might have heard the odd track, but, you know, and I kind of like that in writing. I like people just following the thread and getting into the unknown, and, you know, and I mean, for me, one of the greatest examples of that is someone like Wayne Shorter. You know, the writing, there's little twists and turns that you never quite know how he came about. So I try and capture that. I try, and if I'm writing and I stumble across something that sounds a bit odd, I often get attached to it. I don't. It's the oddness that gets me excited, because, you know, you only got to listen to Spotify playlists and you realize that there's so much bland music out there, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, completely. I like to just sort of follow my nose. And once I've written something in, I hardly ever delete it. I'm just like, well, it's there now. So it's more like I've got to figure out how to use it. But but you, like you said, the oddness, some of the things that I write. Also, I don't know if you find this, either of you, but sometimes I write things that I don't think are going to work and they turn out to be incredible. And then other things I think are going to be absolute bangers are a massive flop. Like, I have no sense of judgment with my own music sometimes.
Yeah, that always happens though. with the album that I just put out, there was one tune on it that I was so close to not putting on the album. It's called Nature on My Street, and doesn't have any trumpet on it. I'm not playing on that tune at all. I just wrote it. I just felt like it didn't need any trumpet. And that's probably part of the reason why I thought, oh, maybe people are going to be like, why has she released a song without any trumpet on? But I really wasn't going to release it. I just felt like, is this really what people like? And everybody bloody loves it. Like, it's everyone's favourite tune. And it's like, oh, right, okay. And I'm like, well, but what about this tune that's so good? And I don't really hear any comments about that one. But it's always the one that you're like, oh, I don't know. And then they love it. And there's other tunes on other projects that I've done which I literally think are the best thing that I've ever heard. I'm like, wow, how have I made this? And nobody's ever even said anything about it. They all like the other ones. You know, it's really hard to tell what people are going to like.
You find that, Mark?
Yeah. And I think ultimately it doesn't really matter what people, you know, it's I think you're the person that you have to like it, don't you? You know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think you should never do something just because you think people are going to like it. I think it should be about what you like. And if it resonates with you, the chances are other people will like it, you know. There'll
Absolutely.
Be a really good. But I think you're right. I mean, sometimes there's things that I write and it grows on me, you know, so I put it aside and then I maybe come back to it and just think, oh, okay, well, maybe there's something I can do with that. Maybe it is okay, that idea, you know.
Who are the 13 on the album?
Well, there are a lot of people that I've worked with a lot over the years. So people that I've built up a kind of strong musical relationship with, you know, like Dave Smith on drums, like Tom Herbert, you know, I've played an awful lot with Tom. We did so many gigs with Polar Bear together, and then John Paricelli, who goes back to Loose Tubes days with me. So there's a lot of old friends, but there's also a lot of new friends, you know, like Laura Jurd and Mike Soper and trombonist Harry. I've never worked with those guys. George Crowley, I haven't really worked with before, you know. So it's a kind of mixture of people, but they're all people that I really admire their playing, you know, and their voices. And, you know, going back to part one, when we were talking about some of the older players, the character that they have, you know, like I mentioned Johnny Hodges, but, you know, there could be so many, but I hear very distinct sounds in a lot of these people, like George, like Laura Jerd. You know, she has this kind of sound on the trumpet. I don't know what you think, Olivia, but, you know, she has a kind of sound on the trumpet that it's instantly kind of recognizable in a way, you know.
Yeah. No, she's great.
She's great, isn't she? You know.
And, yeah.
You know, so there's a, and I really like that about musicians when they have a quirkiness or a sound that you think, oh, that's so and so. You know, it's really nice that.
Yeah, I really agree.
Mm. You know, not being generic, and I think it goes back to the thing we were talking about a minute ago, Rob. You know, where you don't have to learn everything. You know, you need to kind of nurture the things that you love. You know, and you do, and then your style emerges from it. Maybe.
Yeah, I feel like I feel like I've said this a bunch of times, but I've just graduated uni, and I learned a lot in uni. But now that I've left and I don't really have like a regular teacher, I'm right at the start of that journey of trying to find like my sound, and it's really fun like experimenting with things, which maybe if I was in uni they'd go, no, Olivia, you can't do that, like that's not what people like. But at the moment I'm really enjoying like a wide vib. I'm doing it so much, it's so wide, and I know if I was at uni my teacher would go, what are you doing? But like, it's really nice to try and just, you know, see where it takes you. If you like it, go with it. And then that's how your sound grows. So hopefully at some point I'll have a strong sound as well. But I think, yeah, that's really important, having people in your band that have such a distinct sound. That's really what I was trying to go for as well.
Yeah. And that is that quite an old thing, a big vibrato beat?
Yeah, it's kind of like a mixture of like Coleman Hawkins kind of fat vib and like maybe like a Latin-y, like maybe like a Western-y kind of, not Latin-y, like a Western kind of vib, like somewhere in between these two things. It's at the moment, no matter what I play, I feel like the fat vib is what I want to play, no matter what I'm playing on. So maybe it's just any old fat vib, but I don't know where I've got it from, but I'm just going with it at the moment. It's really kind of everything I'm playing. If someone's playing a recording in the corner of Vuma, I'll know it's me because it's got that big old vib on it. And I'm not saying I'm going to stick with this forever. I might. But it's just nice to kind of go explore new things and start that sound process.
Yeah. And you know, the simplicity sometimes in music, it can have simple ingredients but sound incredibly sophisticated, can't it?
Yeah.
Because of the phrasing and the intention and the, you know, and I think with this record of mine, Smiling, I, you know, some of the tunes that I listen to them and they sound quite naive, you know, like the first track, do 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 do, you know, but there's something I like about it. I like the kind of vibe of it, you know.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's important to go with that feeling that you just like the vibe of something, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. What I find a lot with people, I feel people are constantly scared to be like cheesy or, you know, naive, and like people are always scared of it. And it's like, there's a reason it's cheesy, because people love it. We've been doing it for so long now. And I'm trying to do that as well. If I play something that other, like, it could easily go in the cheese direction, I'm just like, no, I think it sounds good, and you keep going with it. And I think music like that is so much fun. So it's always great to hear other people doing stuff like that as well.
Mm. Yeah.
I've only just learned that in the last year, that like, also as crazy as it sounds, like that it's okay to write like a melody that doesn't, like, you know, sometimes I think when I was younger, I was sort of afraid of melody and harmony, as if like, I don't even know what I was afraid of. But I completely agree. I've written more melodies and a bit more like things that, I guess it's partly for me, like singing stuff into a voice note, but it's very interesting to sit and talk about and be like, oh, it's not just me. What a relief that, you know, these like realizations.
You've got the cover of Modern Times behind you, haven't you? Steps Ahead.
Yes, I do. It's a record.
a lot of students would say that was cheesy, that album. I think a lot of students would say, oh, that's a bit cheesy, isn't it? I mean, I think it's a great record. And I think that I don't know if you know it, Olivia. It's a band that Michael Brecker had, but it's a very important album, actually, I think, that record.
Yeah, I may have heard it. I love Michael Brecker. I'm not sure if I've heard that album.
It's with Steps Ahead, and it's very heavy on the electronics and on the iwi, and some of the harmonic shifts in it. You get like one change per tune, so when it comes, it's like being lifted off the floor kind of feeling. It's incredible.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's kind of a simple approach in a way, isn't it? And yet, there's obviously a lot going on with that record, you know. But yeah, simple versus complicated. I don't know. It becomes the same thing after a while, you know, if it's well crafted.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It'll all become the same thing. If you, when you recorded this, did you score out a lot for the whole band, or are you giving them a lot of sort of essences and ideas, or is it like a full on reading situation?
No, there was quite a lot of textual kind of making things up. But yeah, no, I thought quite a lot about that, about how much to write and how much not to write. And a lot of the parts, you know, the guitar part John came up with, you know, and the bass part, I would give Tom Herbert, a kind of rough idea of what the line was a start. But I just said to him, look, that's a starting point. You know, you do what you do. So, I mean, that's really important, isn't it, with how the music shapes, you know, is how much guidance you give, you know. And I think the older I get, the better I'm getting at knowing how much guidance to give to people, how much information, and you know, not give them too much, because you want them to explore and express them, you know, in their own way. So there was quite a lot of scoring out, but there was also improvising bits from everyone as well, you know.
Must have been really fun having all these characters that you know so well. Someone like Laura, like, I know we've talked about already, but she's, you know, you've produced her albums, she's played on yours. There's so much already like musical history there, you know. Do you get that sense when you look at them of like, I know exactly what's about to go on here?
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? I mean, when you're in a room with people that you like and you love their playing, and I mean, it's a kind of dream come true, really. You know, and I think that comes across in the music, and that's what I want people to get off on, the spirit. And, you know, the reason why it's called Smiling is I got it back from Livingston and I listened to it after a couple of weeks, because I always have a little gap, and it kind of made me smile. I mean, there were obviously things that I'd do again differently, but the general vibe of it made me smile. So I sent an email to loads of people that I could think of saying, would you mind?
I was going to ask about this on the cover.
Yeah. Would you mind sending me a picture of a smile? Even though it's a bit weird because, you know, the world's at war and everyone's killing each other, and would you mind? But the reaction was, oh, actually, yeah, we need to smile at times like this. So everyone sent me a picture. And then some of them are obscure. And then some of the people who didn't make the cover, everyone's inside.
Aww.
That's so great.
Kind of what I'd done. That's why it's called Smiling.
That's gorgeous. And they're all people that you know.
I know every one of them, yeah.
That's so great. What a lovely, like I think this a lot about the way the industry has gone is that engaging like your audience and allowing creative ways for them to be a part of the project is a really great way of like creating art. And also you'll basically stand a really good chance that the majority of those people are going to buy a copy because they'll want.
Of course I didn't think about that. Yeah, it's 144 copies sold.
Absolutely smashed it. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is your fourth album on Edition Records, but saying things like that is a terrible idea, because how could I possibly know?
No, it's my seventh.
All right. I've
done two Milija ones and I think it's my seventh or my sixth. Yeah, seventh, I think.
All right, let me do it again. Mark, this is your seventh album on Edition. How is this relationship? Is it nice to be consistently? Because I think it's a wonderful thing if you find a label that feels like the right fit and you just keep releasing.
Yeah, I feel kind of lucky to be part of it, really, you know. It's sometimes a little frustrating because, you realize that, they have the people on the label who earn the money, the Chris Potters and the Dave Hollands. And then they have the people who don't sell as many records, like me, so I feel very lucky to be part of it. And they've been great with me, in terms of being committed to putting the music out and trying to get it to as many people as possible. A lot of it doesn't make any financial sense, I have to say, recording a 13-piece band, I probably won't get the money back ever, but you just do it. It's what you do with your music. That's what we do. We invest in our careers and our music. So
Yeah, that's certainly true for me. I sort of pay to record and earn the money in advance. Well, how about you, Olivia?
Yeah, it was pretty good for me because I was still in uni at the time. So all the recording, like the studio time, I didn't have to pay for.
So did you record it at Leeds Conservatoire?
Yeah.
I'm impressed you cooked this up when you were still at college. That's amazing.
Oh, thank you. It was mixed by a friend who didn't want any money, but I gave him something, just so it was like, come on, you've put so much work into this. But he's like my best friend, Ben McDonald, who mixed it and recorded it. He's amazing. And then it was just basically like mastering and manufacturing. So it wasn't that much. And I've almost made it all back from selling the CDs. So,
wow,
it's pretty good.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah.
Mark, where did you record for this, for Smiley?
I did it at Livingston Studios in London, which is a studio that I've done a lot of stuff at. So I recorded my first album under my own name 25 years ago there.
Wow.
Rose-colored glasses, also with a 12-piece band. So I have a history with this studio, and we did a Polar Bear album, and I've done some other stuff there. And it's just a great studio. It's an old kind of fashion studio in a way, but everything works. You feel like you're going into a studio, you walk in and there's famous records on the wall with mostly pop records that have been done there, and you just think, oh, this is great, and it's nice to play in there, that's kind of why I did it there. So
before we go, tell us, Mark, what have you got? I know you said, I can't remember if you said it in part one or two about not, I think it was part one, the logistics of touring a 13-piece band, or for me, just the logistics of getting a gig. It's hard to tour for the listeners that haven't heard part one. But what have you got? Have you got any plans or anything, any gigs coming up with the project?
We're doing an album launch at the Vortex. So because there's so many, we're going to do two shows.
Oh, yes.
Two separate shows, and we're going to play the album twice. Obviously, it'll be different from the album because we'll open things up a bit and change things and add more solos. But we're going to, So that's April the 6th. We're going to do the Vortex Saturday, April the 6th. And we're going to, it'll be a launch. Brilliant. It'll be a party. It'll be great fun. I can't wait.
Yeah, that will be absolutely stunning. And what a wonderful place to go and play your music.
Yeah, it's like a spiritual home for my generation, the Vortex, in a way.
Feels like it for mine as well, to be honest with you. That's like my number one place to want to go play for like contemporary music that's going to be appreciated by the right audience and every.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's great. Yeah.
Well, congratulations on Smiling. It's a fitting name for a gorgeous album. And thank you so much, Mark, for coming back all these episodes later to celebrate the 7th anniversary. So congratulations. And Olivia Cuttill, thank you as well for part one. It's been a hell of a day.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've loved it. All right. You've been listening to the Jazz Podcast, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.